Hi, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
Boy, it's a good thing that everybody's got smartphone cameras now, isn't it?
No kidding.
That's my angle. What I got this week. I will direct people's attention to the best thing I've heard about the smartphone camera angle so far, which is from John Siracusa on ATP this week, who basically said, you know, if you had told me as a kid watching all of those, beyond belief kind of shows that we were going to all have cameras with us at all times, I'd be like, great, more picture. Finally, we'll get more pictures of Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and UFOs. It's like, no, we didn't get more pictures of things that don't exist. We got more pictures of things that do exist that we didn't believe instead of the things that don't exist that we did believe in. We as kind of complacent people about stories about violence perpetrated by, let's say, the police. So it's amazing. I would never have guessed sitting in the room for the iPhone launch. Sorry, I know that's a sore spot. You were in CES. You were in Vegas at the time. But I would never have guessed that was a moment that would have, I mean, so many ramifications for the world, and we can talk about and have about using smartphones with tracking technology and using it as a method of control for authoritarian states and potentially using it as a way to track the spread of a virus. But one of the huge outcomes of having smartphones with cameras with us at all times has been the documentation of violence by authorities on the people, and we've seen it before, but we're seeing it again played out really hour by hour this last week.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I think it's funny because the camera has always been something that they have spent a lot of time on as technology, and they spent a lot of time improving. And I think in that case, it was because, you know, like, oh, yes, everybody wants to take great pictures, right? Like, that's kind of the stated, you know, Apple spent a lot of time advertising that aspect of it. And I think it is fascinating. You're totally right to see how something unexpected and yet totally logical in hindsight, the fact that we all have video cameras on us now, you know, that has had such a momentous impact on the world, and especially in this particular case of documenting authoritarian violence. I mean, you know, it's certainly something that we got used to seeing overseas a lot of times, you know, in other countries, but it's something that's proved just as true here as it is anywhere else, really. So I think that's one of the, you know, when we talk about the good aspects of technology, and so often, as you said, we focus on things that are potentially scary or risky about technology. But it's also nice when there is a moment where we can say, yeah, well, it's a good thing that technology lets us do this, you know, lets us document these things, because it's important that we get that information out there.
I was thinking about the term gaslighting and how we hear that a lot more now. And I actually think one of the reasons that we hear that term more is because more is documented now. Mm-hmm. And so it used to be something would happen and then people would lie about it. And that's not
one person's word against another.
Yeah. And if you're telling everyone else that it didn't happen, that's not gaslighting, really. It's a lie. Because what gaslighting is telling somebody who knows you're lying a lie.
Right.
Like
by virtue of, generally, because you have some sort of, you know, authority or privilege that allows your voice to be kind of overriding, right?
Sure,
like,
but
the classic case in the movie, right?
Like, in the movie, Gaslight,
the story,
is
a man telling a woman that something she thinks is happening is not.
Is actually not happening. So I think that this word has come to prominence now, in part because everything is documented in a way it wasn't before. And so it used to be people would just lie about something that happened. And it's harder to do that now. So instead, what you get is these weird cases of gaslighting where people say to you something didn't happen, but now you saw it, right? Now you saw it. And so what used to be like, well, because I think in human nature, there's definitely a part of our brain that wants to accept that if somebody says something is a fact, that, and especially if they're in a position of authority or they were there, that you tend to give them credibility. But if you were there, then you know the truth. And now with all this documentation, we know that we were there. And it becomes, it goes from being like, oh, well, you know, maybe who can tell? Maybe different people had different perspectives on it. And now it's, I saw it. I saw what happened. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes what we see, you know, because photography and video is lacking some context, and we've definitely seen things that shot from one angle, it looks one way, and shot from another angle, it looks another way. I actually had that happen to me yesterday where I was watching the, and when the video starts and stops, but I had that yesterday where there was the video from the TV station in Buffalo about the 75-year-old man being pushed down by police and injuring, you know, he hit the concrete really hard. And from the angle that first came out, it was sort of like, wow, this is really bad, although I'm not quite sure what he was doing, and was he doing something to police, and it's not really sure, but regardless, they shouldn't have pushed him down. And then another video came out from across the street, and it went the other way, where from the other angle, you're like, oh no, this is like very, very, like double bad to the first video. So it can go both ways. But the larger point is, we have seen it a lot, where I think there are people who are so used to lying and getting away with things that they can't stop, even though everybody's seen what really happened. They still can't stop the lie.
Yeah, I it's funny because you say that, and my first thought was, well, there are certainly instances in which, let's say, people in position of authorities, politicians in our government, will say things, and people will, you know, this is another place where the technology that has, you know, good and bad angles to it, right? Like social media, a lot of downsides, as we've discussed, you know, ad infinitum over the past several years. But there are upsides too, because you see all these people who like compile clips of like, you know, somebody denying they ever said something. It's like, here is literally the clip of you saying that thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have it here, but they don't acknowledge it, or they just ignore it, right? That's the other problem, is like, there's so much of, even though we have documentation, like you said, some people can't stop lying about it. They can't stop digging themselves into that hole. And, you know, the real question is what we do about it after that point.
I think that one of the things that this kind of technology and this kind of global media, you know, social media sphere has done is strangely, it's laid bare in many cases places where people's prejudices or predispositions are always going to give the benefit of the doubt to the side they believe in, right? People don't want to be moved. Mm-hmm. People don't want to be changed. And if, as we get to a point where it's so easy, there's so much that's documented. I keep coming back to documentation. Like, there's so much in our society now that's documented and it's available. Like, politicians used to have video tape of things that they said, but they were in a dusty vault at a TV station in their local market. And now they're all searchable on the internet and they're being cataloged all the time. That you end up in positions where people know that what they're saying is not only not true, but they know that they will be fact-checked. They know that that video of them saying the reverse will come out. They know the video of the thing happening that they said didn't happen will come out. And it's had this very weird effect where I think if you're a tech optimist, you look 10 years ago, you looked at this and you said, well, people are going to have to tell the truth now. And what's actually happened is the liars continue to lie. And now the people who follow them or are predisposed to follow them, and this could be anyone. I'm actually not making a pointed jab at anybody here. It could be anybody in any position of authority at any level, police, politicians, whatever. But you end up in a situation where they still say the lie, and as somebody who's predisposed to believe them or to follow them or to be on their side, you're now put in a position where you have to believe a lie that you know is a lie. And I wonder if that is part of what this whole post-truth society's problem really is you end up having to just deny facts and what you see with your own eyes, because you can't afford, you would rather gaslight yourself than experience the cognitive dissonance of having your view shaken. And it's really troubling, because I would hope that that facts would win the day, but you know, bringing out more facts seems to have done. I guess that's an economic argument, right? We have a surplus of facts to the point where now facts have no value because everything is known.
Deflation.
And so now you're like, I don't care about the facts anymore. And that this is where the Stephen Colbert, Comedy Central Stephen Colbert concept of truthiness came in, right? Back in the day, this was an early example of that, which is just like, it's not about facts anymore in a lot of cases. We know the facts. It's about saying things that, you know, you could basically plausibly integrate into your brain and believe are true.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's the post-fact world, I know some people have referred to it as.
Yeah. Post-truth, post-fact, and it's not great on that level, but then there is this other level. And this is, I think, maybe the most important point of where we are right now, which is so much gets magnified by people on, you know, various polar ends of a spectrum who hate each other for various reasons, for politics, for society, for there's so many reasons, right? I really do want to believe that there's a large bulk of people who are reasonable people who do not like, who do not like seeing things like horrible police violence, and who can integrate that into their worldview. That's what I would like to believe, is that although there are some people who are going to look at these videos of police officers hitting, beating, gunning down, killing, kneeling on Black people in the U.S. and say, you know, terrible things about it, why it's all justified, I believe that there are more people, even those predisposed to support the police, even those predisposed to think that the police are doing their job and the people who are getting hurt are, you know, in some way deserved it, they can't justify that when they see it for themselves. And that's the power of seeing it for yourself. And so my hope is that what's happening right now is a very important moment in our society where a lot of people realize they can't go on with the picture in their head of how if there's police and people are injured, it's probably because they were shady and the police were just doing their jobs. Because the more times you see this, the more you become one of those people who's been a witness to police violence, and that's going to change your worldview. So I think, you know, and I think there are, I suspect there are a lot of police officers and other people in law enforcement who welcome this because they live it every day and they know that these things go on. And then there are the people who do this and they don't welcome it. But, and we're seeing those people too. So, but I would like to believe that there's a cross section of humanity who, even though they didn't want to believe it and they rationalized it away, that when you see it, it changes everything. I've got to hope that that's the case. I've got to hope that's the case.
Certainly, you know, I am hopeful for that along with you. I think there's a lot of challenges to that. I mean, you know, among other things, you mentioned at one point, like seeing things that reinforce what you want to believe. And of course, that's something that social media has done a lot of, especially Facebook, which has, you know, run into some problems with how they want what benefits them versus what benefits the people using them and what benefits the larger society. And I think that's it's hard to get too much into this without just saying, like, you know, essentially what I believe, which is that I think that Facebook has really stoked that and that they really have made some bad calls there. And I think that it's a difficult position to be in when you have people who are willfully using technology for the kind of things that you are like, well, technology could be used for this. Like, that's just a side effect of technology, is sometimes, you know, people get into their little bubbles and stuff. But to have some company essentially, I don't want to quite say weaponize, but certainly profit on that, feels very much like, you know, giving into the worst impulses amongst people who use technology. And that's, you know, another angle of where, you know, technology, again, something that I don't know if we had gone back to either that iPhone announcement or prior and said, like, yeah, this technology that just came out where we can connect people online. Yeah, it's great. Brings the world together. Unfortunately, it also does all of these other things that are totally antithetical.
Also,
to
yes, also brings
kind of
all the worst
idea.
People in the world together and lets them broadcast their opinions to everyone else who doesn't know if they're true or yep. not. And yeah, well, you know, here's a lesson that I've learned in my many years on this planet now, which is when they say that technology is going to change the world, that is a real be careful what you wish for moment. Mm-hmm. And because the truth is, and I say this as somebody who loves technology, technology is not fundamentally good or bad. It just is. And it can be used for good and it can be used for bad.
Yep.
And that has been the case. I think those of us who use technology kind of enthusiastically, what we really benefit from is seeing it before it's more broadly applied. And, you know, this is an awful example, but it's true. It's like online communities taught me very early on that there are a lot of awful human beings who will lie and say terrible things and want to fight and want to like, and that you can't just leave an online community unpoliced.
Right.
Forgive the phrasing, but like you have to have content control and moderation in an online community, because online communities are not, you know, free speech, unfettered free speech
yeah.
zones. Right. Exactly. Or it turns to garbage. And when you get to the scale of major social media organizations, the tendency is basically to say, well, at this scale, we can't do anything to police it.
So abdicate responsibility.
We abdicate all responsibility from it. And anybody who is I was on Usenet in like 1989, and I could have told you that if one day there would be a global social community with no rules, I would say, oh my God. Like the trolls, the flame wars, you can't do that. But that's where we are with Facebook and Twitter. That's where we are. So, you know, the advantage, my point is that if you're a techie person, I think you see a lot of this stuff before the rest of the world sees it. And that can be put you in an interesting position where you're like, in my little bubble here, we're a little bit ahead. And that means you can see like the benefits, which is like, oh, but now you always have your camera with you and you can take pictures. Yay. But you also see the negative things about the spread of that technology, because you probably witnessed them before they spread.
Right. And on the flip side, I mean, yeah, even with the camera thing, you know, just thinking about like there's a darker flip side there too, right? Surveillance state, like certainly who has the control of it, right? Like it's at least the fact that it's been available in devices that are, you know, readily available to the average person helps a lot.
Right.
But, you know, there's also huge camera networks in countries like the UK and to a lesser extent the US.
Yes.
Where that information is controlled by the government. And it's like, well, that's a very different message about the same technology. It's less about what the technology enables and more about who has it, who can use it, and what are they doing with it.
So this week, Ben Thompson at Stratechery made an argument basically in favor of Facebook's policies. And it was a very... And on their podcast, Dithering, John Gruber pushed back and said he, you know, completely disagrees with that. But I think Ben's point is interesting because he tried to come at it from a really kind of broad perspective of big picture stuff, which I find valuable, even though I'm not sure I agree with him either. I think it's valuable that he said, let's not take this one example where we all agree that it's bad. And or most of us agree that it's bad. And let's look at a bigger example. And one of the things he brought up, and I know that he thinks about this because he lives in Taiwan, so he is thinking about what's going on with China a lot. But he said, you know, once you head down this path, you have powerful actors who can determine what is valid and what is not valid. And, you know, essentially, I don't want to sum up his argument because his argument is complex and it's worth thinking about even if you really reject it in the end. But basically what he's saying is, do you want Mark Zuckerberg deciding what is truth and what is not? Because he's not bound by the First Amendment, right? It's Facebook is a private company. It's publicly held, but it's like it's a company. It's not a government. And he can make decisions to completely change what people on Facebook see in terms of what's going on in the world. And his argument is, you don't want somebody like that taking power and taking control. What you want is people to post whatever stupid stuff they want, and then other people to be able to say, that's not true. And I think there's some idealism there versus realism and all that, but I do think it's worth pausing to point out that all sorts of things that bring great features and functionality and stuff to parts of the world are absolutely always going to be used by authoritarian regimes, for example, and even some non-authoritarian regimes that have some, you know, authoritarian tendencies in some ways. I think the CCTV in England is a good example of that, to do their stuff. Like, they're going to use it for their purposes too, and that's always going to happen. There's always going to be somebody who is sitting somewhere in an office in some country who's going to say, oh, you know, we could use that to do whatever it is that we want to do. And that's just we all need to understand that. That was a story I linked to actually this week about how there's a proposed bipartisan bill, and the whole idea of it is to regulate privacy about the contact tracing apps that Google and Apple are doing. And it's fascinating, and I haven't seen a lot of coverage of this, but it's fascinating because the idea is, the way it's pitched is, well, we know Google and Apple say that this is all built for privacy, which it is, but people don't trust Google. So we're gonna pass a law that says that they have to live up to this and they can't spy, because we wanna encourage people to use this system for contact tracing going forward, and so we want to reassure them. It's like, okay, I admire that, but my brain is sitting there thinking, is that what is really going on here? Because this sounds to me, because we all know that the idea that you're tracking everybody's movements could potentially be subverted and used badly, which is why Google and Apple have framed it the way they have. Mm-hmm. The bill, according to the Washington Post, requires companies developing contact tracing apps to do so in collaboration with public health authorities. So I don't know if they intended it this way, but I look at this and I think, it sounds to me like what this bill that is supposedly enforcing privacy actually might be doing is forcing Google and Apple to give public health officials more personal data that they want.
Right.
Because we've seen the public health officials complain that they don't get GPS logs and stuff like that, and more like very specific personal data, and have it delivered directly to them. You know, they have lots of complaints.
Sure. And you know, there's an argument there that like that could be helpful. But at the same time, the question is, what is the return? What is the help versus the potential harm? Right. Like, sure, it might be helpful for health researchers to know every place that you've been. But is that really going to provide you so much information over what devices you've been in contact with that it's worth the risk?
Right. And there's two things here. One is, does a bill that's supposed to inoculate Apple and Google and make them seem less threatening, that also potentially could lead to a requirement of way more data being downloaded, is that really going to work at the stated objective, which mm-hmm. is to get more people to believe that this is safe and that they could use it and that it's not an intrusion? I'm not sure it does. And I haven't seen any reports that they're actually going to do that, but I'm trying to read between the lines here. And then the larger point, which is, once that data, and this is why Apple and Google's system is designed this way, once that data gets back in government, it's not a big leap for somebody in government to say, one, well, we want that data too. And two, even though the law says we don't really get that data, I can go to court and under this terrorism act or some other act that was probably passed after 9/11, I'm going to get a court order that requires that data to be given to me, because once it's sort of out there, it's potentially accessible. Whereas Google and Apple system is designed to not put it out there.
Right. And I mean, the flip side of this debate is the encryption debate, right?
The
government wanting to say, like, hey, I fundamentally believe that a lot of the people who are proposing that, you know, the encryption backdoor legislation intend, you know, have good intentions. Fortunately, good intentions don't get you very far, right?
It's, like, it's what the Washington Post editorial board called famously the secure golden key, which is basically what they said is, well, we want a government backdoor for encryption. So we propose a magic unicorn.
Yeah.
because who doesn't love a magic unicorn? It's like, it doesn't exist.
Sounds great.
Is the problem.
Sounds great.
So let's not legislate a magic unicorn because we can't procure one anywhere. It's not available. And yeah. Taping a stick to the forehead of a horse is not going to do it, right? But that's right. You're exactly yeah. right. The idea that encryption is intended to be this, well, you know, we'll have procedures and law abiding country, blah, 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 blah. But once that's broken, the authoritarian governments will just use it to look at
right.
all your
you
data.
You can't unbreak it, right? Like you can't
make it only work in the US. And for people who say, well, right. yes, because you can keep the secure golden key, you can keep the magic unicorn safe. We know that's not true because with the Clipper chip, which was a government-based encryption system in the 90s during the Clinton administration, and the Clipper chip key got out. Like, it will get right. out.
Well, I mean, it's like saying that we invented some, you know, it's like, you know, the nuclear bomb, right? It's like, you can't uninvent it. It's done. It doesn't matter if, like, you keep those best secrets possible. Once somebody knows, hey, they figured out a way to split the atom and cause huge devastation, other people will figure it out because it's just science, right? Like, it's just, it doesn't require any special knowledge, right? Like, it's, you know, other countries or other, you know, actors can figure out how to duplicate that. And that's the case with the magical key because, you know, if there is a backdoor in there that allows that kind of access, someone else will find it.
Yeah.
Like, look at... Yeah, all the scene. We don't need to go into this. So everybody knows this who is listening to the show.
And this is the most important thing about talking about tech is that you always need to consider how this will be misused. And I think that
absolutely.
Things in a lot of parts of the tech industry are changing in this way. It's funny. One of the ways that I feel like this kind of thing changes is the more you see tech companies using security methods, often... invented in the security community. And I'm thinking about like bounties. Like there was actually a story this week about somebody who found an Apple bug and got like $100,000 for it. Like they used the bounty program. But the reason I bring this up is that there is a mindset in that world, especially, which is, how does this get abused? How does this get broken? Assume somebody will do something bad with it. And we've seen that spread to other parts of tech. And I think it's actually, as horrible as it sounds, I think it's super healthy, which is don't ever invent something without considering all the ramifications of how it could be used for good, used for bad, and then build into your system tools to prevent it from being used in the ways that you don't like. And that's honestly the Apple Google contact tracing system, which is based on Apple's Find My stuff, is that's the whole design
of it. Pretty good.
That's the whole
good.
Way they and it's so circuitous and so weird because they want to make it that it can't be abused. It can't be misused. And you everything you make, you have to think of it that way.
Well, it all comes back as it always does to Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park.
Ah, yes,
saying you were so busy thinking about whether or not you could do this thing, you didn't stop to think if you should do this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that is a huge mindset in tech. Is just so many people, especially in the last 20 years or so, as it's become like this exponential ramp in what technology is capable of. There are so many people out there who are pushing the envelope. Often in good ways, there's the like, oh, can I do this with this technology? I wonder if I can like put these two technologies together and have it produce this other thing that would be really cool. And a lot of that time, that stuff is great. But a lot of that time, people just spend all their time worrying about whether or not they could do something really cool. And it turns out that, yes, they can, but it also has all of these unintended side effects. I mean, Google is, I think, famous for this. Like, what was the thing was 10 years ago or so where they were like collecting Wi-Fi access point information or something like that?
Right.
And it's just like, yeah, we just thought it would be super handy to have this information. It's like, yes, but it's also an invasion of privacy.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Either people are not watching as many sci-fi movies as they should, and I recommend it. My favorite genre, but either that or they're taking the wrong lessons from them because you and I very quickly spun out a half a dozen movies that are all about the unintended consequences of an invention that wasn't properly thought through. Like I fired off Real Genius, in which a bunch of smart college students at essentially Caltech invent a small laser, small powerful laser, and then discover that it's going to be mounted on the bottom of a jet or in a on a satellite and used to like assassinate people. You mentioned sneakers.
Which goes back to the encryption debate where it's like, well, we've got a key that we have that magical key, but it falls into the wrong hands.
That's right. And then there's Jurassic Park, which you just mentioned, which is, you know, again, it is hubris. Hey,
let's
you know
make
what
dinosaurs.
The first,
that sounds
you know,
awesome.
You know what the first science fiction novel generally thought to be the first science fiction novel of all time was?
I do.
Frankenstein. Which is, guess what? About
all
a creator.
About unintended consequences, yeah.
Not thinking through the horrible consequences of their creation, which is not to say you shouldn't create things. It's to say, think it through. That's all I'm saying. Think it through.
Use your head. Use your head, people.
Yeah. All right. Well, nice conversation on a tough week, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to know what to say sometimes in these moments, but
I've been working on my long-term projects a lot this week and only posting a few links to Six Colors, largely because, you know, it's one of those things where I think, do I really want to, and I skipped my Macworld column. This was my skip week this week. This is like, well,
hey,
it's going to be
high five.
Oh, right. It's going to be a busy week later, you know, at the end of the month. We're going to ramp up to WWDC, busy few weeks. But also that this week is a real tough week, and it's hard to, one, get up the motivation to be like, hey, guys, here's a tip.
Technology.
And also to post, hey, guys, here's a tip right now also feels like, So, you know, I'm working on a bunch of stuff in the background that will come out later. And it's still more or less locked down. Although, my little personal behind the scenes, my wife is now, like not in the house 2.5 days a week for the first time since the lockdown. She's back in the library because they're doing curbside service, so people can order books and then drive up and call, and the books get set outside and they come and get them. So that's weird too, but like my point is that we're also still in the lockdown. My kids are still finishing school in the lockdown. Like nothing like multiple crises happening simultaneously to really make you productive.
Yeah, that's one way to approach it.
Yeah.
The other way is just very unproductive, which is the approach I've taken.
That works. That works too. Well, look at us. We produced a podcast. Yippee for us. Thank you, supporters, members, subscribers. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll have some nice, positive technology things to talk about. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.